facing the biggest challenge and winning. Do you like a challenge? I do. Especially in the field of sports. How do you respond when a challenge comes your way? I guess it depends on the kind of challenge, doesn't it? Many challenges are not fun and games. They mean hard work. Sometimes there's a cost involved to them. This morning I want to talk to you about the biggest challenge of all that as a Christian we face. If you are successful in meeting this challenge, we are promised a blessing from the hand of the Lord. The challenge am I talking about? Well, it is found in the 8th and final Beatitude, in Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. See it here on the screen. I encourage you to also look it up in your Bible, in the New Testament, so you can refer to it as we proceed through this message. Let me read it to you. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice, be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. I think of all of the Beatitudes, this one would surely be the least popular. Why? By mere definition, persecution involves pain, it involves suffering. And who in the world wants that? Many of us would rather have the blessing that comes to the merciful than the blessing that comes to the persecuted. Few people in their right mind would freely choose the path of persecution. And here it is in our text. We can't skip it. We can't pretend it isn't there. We have to deal with it. And as I begin my message today, there are 6 facts I want to draw to your attention. These facts make this beatitude impossible to ignore. Here are the facts. Number 1, it is the last beatitude. Number 2, it is the longest beatitude. It consists of 3 verses. Number 3, it is the only beatitude with a command. What is that command? Rejoice. Number 4, it is the only beatitude with an explanation. Number 5, it is the only beatitude repeated by Jesus. And lastly, number 6, it is the only beatitude addressed to the reader. All these facts, friends, are very important. As the last beatitude, it comes as the logical climax to everything that has preceded it. Since it is the longest beatitude, it's very difficult to ignore it. The command and the explanation only emphasize its importance. The repetition and the change from the third person to the second person forces us to stop and to consider what these verses are saying to us as individuals. Let's begin by looking at the word persecution. That very word sounds harsh. It sounds ugly. It evokes images of men and women being burned at the stake, of babies being taken from their mothers, of Christians being thrown to the lions, of brave pastors tortured for not renouncing their faith. Have you ever wondered what happened to the apostles and the early church leaders after the writing of the New Testament? Well, church history and tradition gives us the following answers. Andrew, crucified, left hanging on a cross for 3 days. Bartholomew, nevertheless stoned to death. John, exiled to Patmos, later died as a prisoner there. Jude, crucified. Matthew, slain by the sword. Matthias, stoned and then beheaded. Paul, beheaded by Nero in Rome. Peter, crucified upside down. Philip, crucified. Simon the Zealot, crucified. Thomas, speared to death. Although we can't absolutely verify the facts in each case, it appears none of the apostles escaped persecution. All died as a result of living out their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. We know that such things happened centuries ago. Do they still happen today? Well, yes, they do, and I think that was made very clear through what we heard this morning just a few moments ago. Open Doors is an organization that exists for the very purpose of helping persecuted Christians around the world. They've identified the World Watch List. This is a yearly rating of 50 countries according to the degree of persecution that each one faces. For example, here are the five countries at the top of that list for 2019. Number one, North Korea. Year after year, ever since 2002, it is considered to be the hardest country for a Christian to live in. Number two, Afghanistan. That's the second one on the world top list. Here, if a believer is found, he could be excluded from the community. He could be admitted into a mental institution, or he could be killed. Somalia is number three. Most from this country believe that to be a Somali is to be a Muslim. Those who come to Christ are seen as denying their religion, as well as their entire nationality, and thus deserve the death penalty. And number four is Libya. Converts to Christianity face abuse and violence for their decision to follow Jesus. And lastly, number five, Pakistan. Christians are accused of blasphemy, which carries the death penalty. Christian girls are often forced to marry Muslim men. You see, persecution should not surprise us, since Jesus warned his followers that they could expect opposition from the world. What did he say in John 15:20? If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. John 16:33, in this world you will have trouble. It is important to understand what these texts are saying. What exactly does it mean to be persecuted? Perhaps it's easier to say what it doesn't mean. It's not referring to those people who suffer because of offensive, crude behavior. In other words, people who persist in an unmannerly conduct as a result end up suffering for it. Here's another one. You don't use deodorant, don't claim persecution because no one wants to sit next to you at work or anywhere else. If you're rude or disrespectful to your boss, don't be surprised to find yourself ostracized or even out of a job. These are not examples of persecution. Furthermore, Jesus is not referring to people who suffer because they are lazy or they show up late, leave early, don't work hard, criticize others, bend the rules, and in general do not a good job. In that case, it doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or not. If you're lazy, you deserve to be fired. One other point. This beatitude is not promising a blessing to those who break the law or become obnoxious in their pursuit of things they believe in. In general, this beatitude does not apply to trouble you bring upon yourself. It does apply, however, to facing opposition because of taking a stand for Jesus Christ or his teachings. The key to understanding this principle lies in the word righteous. Take the first part of that word, is the word right. The word right actually means straight. When your life is straight by God's standards, it is righteous. You see, we live in a crooked world because of sin. What happens when you put a straight stick next to a crooked stick? Well, the straight stick, the straightness of the straight stick exposes the crookedness of the crooked stick. You don't have to say anything in that case. The difference is obvious for all to see. This beatitude might be translated this way: blessed are those who are persecuted because their lives are straight. Persecution is a sign that your life is straight in the eyes of the world. Someone made this statement: it's difficult to be indifferent to a wide-awake Christian. Either hate him, or you love him, but you can't ignore him. A wide-awake Christian confronts others with the reality of God. You can't be neutral in those cases. Such people must be either crowned or crucified because they're considered to be either right or to be considered wrong. Quite often the world would choose crucifixion, use that term loosely. In this beatitude, note that Jesus identifies three particular forms that this persecution can take. First, persecution. The word means to pursue, chase, harass, pressure. It was often used for the chasing down of criminals. In this case, because of the Christian's belief, such a person is thought of as a criminal. Use an example of this. One woman in Pakistan, by the name of Asua Bibi, became famous around the world to many prayer warriors during her 10 years of imprisonment. This was persecution in its highest form. You see, Asua was in jail simply for attempting to defend her Christian faith to her other fellow workers. Those workers reported her for blasphemy. Over her 10-year imprisonment, a death threat continually hung over her head. Finally, last year, she was declared to be innocent by the ruling authorities and could go free. That was no easy matter, because protesting mobs were waiting to kill her. It was with great difficulty and the assistance of a Christian organization that she was secretly whisked away to safety in another country, reunited with her husband and with her children. Even today, it is not known by the general public where that is for her own protection. You may not have heard about her case because stories of true Christian persecution rarely meet and get into the national news. Well, another word that is used for persecution is insults. That word means to cast into the teeth, as in hurling an insult. It means the Christian can expect to be made the butt of public jokes and open ridicule. Number three, all kinds of evil. This phrase means that at times unbelievers will tell deliberate lies about a Christian. It also means there's no limit on the kind of slander and falsehood we may have to endure. Though in Canada we don't go to jail for sharing our faith, we do live in a day and age where Christian bashing is a popular indoor sport. Such things shouldn't surprise us. I think, in fact, as our culture continues its dizzy spiral downward, we should actually expect things to get worse, not better. Since we can't do anything to change the way the world treats us, the only question is this: how should we respond? Let me share three examples, simple answers to that question. Number one, we must commit to living a consistent Christian life. Now that phrase may sound vague to you, but in this context, living a consistent Christian life simply means living the sort of life that Jesus described for us in the Beatitudes that we went through over the last number of weeks. Number one, poor in spirit. Then mourning over sin. Meek in the face of injustice. Hungering and thirsting after righteousness. Merciful. Pure in heart. Peacemaking. These qualities form an indelible mark on the followers of Jesus Christ. Live like this, and almost everyone will know that you're a Christian. They may not like it, but they can't deny it. When you live such a life, you won't need to seek persecution. It'll seek you. The final beatitude is not calling us to go out and start trouble. Far from it. But if you live like Jesus has told us to, persecution will eventually be our lot. So the first way to respond to the evil that is all around us in this world is to live a consistent Christian life. Number two, we need to defend what is right and oppose what is wrong. Ponder these words from Martin Luther, the father of the Protestant Reformation. If I declare with the loudest voice and clearest exposition every portion of God's truth, except the one little bit which the world and the devil are at that moment attacking, I'm not confessing Christ, no matter how boldly I may be professing Christ. For the soldier to be steady on all the battlefield is mere flight and disgrace if he flinches at that single moment. This statement may be hard to understand at first, but any soldier would understand these words. You can't run from the battle. When you hear the sound of the cannon fire, you got to be ready to pick up your weapon and head for the front lines. It is not enough to say I'm a Christian when the battle is raging elsewhere. You should stand and fight where the enemy is attacking. There are times when it is necessary for all of us to speak up. Someone says to you, the universe came into being through blind evolution. You have a moral obligation to respond. You need to say no. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. When someone says to you, Jesus was nothing more than a Galilean peasant with an amazing gift for teaching, you should respond, no, he is the Son of God. When someone attempts to justify killing the old because they've become a nuisance and a burden to society, or unborn babies because they consider them not yet human beings, you need to find a way to defend the inherent value of human life as created in God's image. When you encounter someone mocking the gospel and arguing that there are many ways to heaven, you need to kindly and lovingly and gently respond that there is no other name than Jesus by which a person can be saved. If you don't speak up, who will? If you don't defend the cause of righteousness, who will speak up in your place? You see, perhaps God gave you your job or put you on a certain street and gave you a strategic position, maybe in your company and neighborhood, because he wants you to speak out boldly and righteously. Number three, we must respond to opposition in a godly fashion. Jesus said, rejoice. That's hard to do when people call you a bigot or a narrow-minded extremist, something much worse. How do you rejoice in such circumstances? Well, Jesus explains the answer. We are to rejoice for two reasons. Number one, because we have a great reward in heaven. That's future. Number two, because we have joined with our godly ancestors from the past. Persecution and opposition, as painful as it may be, does have a silver lining. You know what it is? It gives us a new perspective on yesterday and also on tomorrow, which makes it easier to endure what happens today. How are we to endure suffering? The New Testament offers three pieces of advice. Pray, bless, endure. Pray for yourself and for those who oppose you. Bless them in the name of the Lord. And endure persecution patiently, knowing that the Lord is in control of even the tiniest circumstance of our lives. Our righteousness will intimidate some. Our boldness will annoy others, and I don't mean boldness in an obnoxious way that will annoy anyone. Our refusal to participate in their sin will infuriate still others, and our love for God will mystify the rest. There is another way of looking at this. God's kingdom is not a kingdom of power and military might, but a kingdom of love and of goodness. And it collides every day with the world's kingdom. Two kingdoms are ever in conflict and can never lie down together in peace. Therefore, we must conclude that the condition of being despised and rejected is the natural condition of those who follow the Lord. It is just as much a part of the gospel as being poor in spirit, meek, and merciful. Happened to the prophets, happened to the Lord Jesus. What happened to him will at times happen to us. What happens to us will happen to our children, to our grandchildren, to our young people, if they diligently follow the Lord. It will happen as long as the disciples of Christ and the rest of the citizens of this world inhabit the same planet together, live on the same street, work in the same offices, attend the same schools, and shop in the same stores. In fact, I would go so far as to say that we should not be surprised if anti-Christian rhetoric increases. We should be surprised if it doesn't. With this I close. What have you done in the last month or two that has caused anyone to challenge your faith? When have you risked speaking out in favor of righteousness? How have you defended the cause of Christ and the purity of the gospel? Maybe some of us need to consider this beatitude very carefully. It is not that we have necessarily said anything against Jesus. The problem is when we say nothing at all. We've gone along and we've gotten along. Have you been guilty of whittling down the sharp edges of your faith so that you no longer like a square peg in a round hole? Maybe you realize today that you've been guilty of fitting too snugly into the holes of the world. One final word. Jesus promises, great is your reward in heaven. I wonder how all the troubles of this life look to us when we finally get to heaven. In heaven, no one will ever regret having lived for Jesus while down here on earth. We'll not only regret that we don't do more for him, and it will be worth it all when we see Jesus. While we are waiting for Jesus to take us home, consider the challenge of living your life as described in the video you're about to watch and hear. Song is called The People of the Cross. Let's all be faithful to the end so that we may hear the Lord's words eventually. Well done.